Welcome back to Just Scrap Radio on BJPenn.com. I'm your host, Cole Sheldon. In the first episode of 2021, we got a good lineup for you ahead of UFC Fight Island 7 and UFC Fight Island 8, just because it's Wednesday. So I decided to split the interview. So some will be on this week, some will be on next week's show for that card. But first up, we're going to be joined by Matt Brown to preview his co-main event fight against Carlos Condit. This is a fight that's been years in the making. We talked to Matt about all that, like just finally being able to fight this guy, what a win over Condit does for his legacy, and how many more fights he has. Brown just recently turned 40 years old. He was quite open that, look, like you can't fight forever. He has a coffee business. He has other businesses. He knows he's set up, and fighting is something that's going to last forever. So maybe this is it for Brown. Maybe he tries to get a couple more in, but his career's winding down. He wanted that Condit fight, so it should be a really good fight. We're then joined by Tyson Nam to preview his fight against Matt Schnell on the 20th. This is a fight that's been supposed to happen a couple times. Schnell had to pull out both times due to illnesses. But this should be a great fight. Tyson Nam, tons of knockpower. Matt Schnell, so dangerous on the ground. It's kind of that striker versus grappler matchup. So we talk about Nam. We talked to Tyson about that. And just what a win over Matt Schnell does for him. Like, he started his UFC career losses to Sergio Pettis and Kai Kara-France, and he rebounded two straight knockout wins over UFC newcomers. But if he can beat a guy like Matt Schnell, who's proven himself in the division, this would be a big win for Tyson Nam. We're then joined by Ike Villanueva, who fights on the 20th, to talk about his fight against Vinicius Moreira. Ike knows this is do or die for his UFC career. He's 0-2, two stoppage losses. Ike knows he has to win this if he's going to remain on the UFC, and he feels more prepared. He knows his UFC debut, short notice, heavyweight fight against Chase Sherman. Chase Sherman ended up popping for steroids, so he's hoping that gets turned into no contest. And his last time out, the fight was stopped to a cut, which he's really disappointed with. So he's really ready to show the world really who Ike Villanueva is inside the octagon. So that should be a good fight. I expect someone to get finished in that one for sure. And finally, we close things out with UFC commentator Brendan Fitzgerald, just to talk about what this past year was like for him. Him and Michael Bisping went on a flight in early March to Brasilia, Brazil, and that's exactly when the whole world shut down. So I just wanted to touch with Brendan, like, what this year is like, because he commentated that first event with no fans. He was wondering, man, am I going to even have a job by the end of this year? But so we talk about the roller coaster of the year, and then doing the contender series, doing all these big events, and then we just touch on one under the radar fight on this three event stretch on Fight Island. And it may surprise you, but it was a really good pick. It's a fight I'm really looking forward to. So be sure to listen to that. Be sure to share the show, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And thank you all for listening. Have a good day. All right, we're joined by UFC welterweight Matt Brown. He's got a big fight coming up. Matt, man, how's it going?
Very good. Excellent.
A big fight against Carlos Condit. This one's years in the making. What's it like to be able to finally fight him?
Well, happy to finally be able to make it to the fight. You know, I had to pull out twice so far. So I'm feeling very healthy and very strong right now. So, you know, all signs point to a great performance.
This is one that's been booked a couple times. Like you mentioned, you've had to pull out. After that second time, was there ever thought that, man, maybe I won't be able to ever fight this guy?
Yeah, for sure. But you know, I just keep my head down, bite down mouthpiece, keep walking forward, man. And, you know, some things happen just the way they're supposed to.
And having this fight in front of no fans, is that a bit weird? Because this is a fight that would have been a mega fight back a couple years ago.
Yeah, it is what it is. I'm not even thinking about it, to be honest. I mean, I fought in Jacksonville with no fans, and it threw me off a little bit, but I learned my lesson. You know, you can't let that get to you. You just got to go out there and fight, man. It's the same thing, whether there's fans out there or not.
And heading out to Fight Island in Abu Dhabi, are you looking forward to that, or do you wish this was in Vegas?
I think, like, looking back on it, it'll be a cool thing to look back on and be like, look, I fought on Fight Island during the coronavirus pandemic. You know, we're all going to look back on this time and, you know, 50 years from now, or 20 years from now, or whatever, and it's going to be something we talk about with our grandkids. To say I fought on Fight Island would be cool, but I'm not looking forward to the flight or, you know, the time change and all that. But again, it is what it is, man. I'm out there to fight.
You only fought once last year, a loss to Miguel Baeza, but you had some success in that first round. You hurt him. Like, what do you take away from that loss? Because that was obviously your first fight, too, with the no fans.
You know, I think the biggest takeaway is, like, I got to take every fight serious. You know, I didn't really take that fight serious. I kind of thought that I would just go out there and knock him out right away, and I almost did, but I didn't really respect like who he was or his skills or what he could do, which at my level of experience and age and everything, I should definitely know better. Like that was a very like amateurish mistake on my part, but you know, won't let it happen again.
But entering that fight, like, is that one that's kind of hard to train for? Just because you look at the guys you were fighting before, you're fighting like Damian Maia, Donald Cerrone, Daniel Sanchez. Like, you're fighting like kind of these OGs guys, and then you're getting this young up and comer who not many people know of. Like, does that affect some of the training going into that one?
I guess it did a little bit. Like, I wasn't nearly as motivated. Like, I actually took that fight only because it was supposed to be here in Columbus, Ohio, my hometown. That was the only reason that I was really itching to fight right then. And then it just, you know, ended up getting rebooked because of coronavirus and everything. So yeah, there was maybe a little bit of that, but you know, that's no excuse, man. I'm a professional and I'm supposed to be in shape all the time, be ready to fight anytime. And that's who I've always been. But so, you know, it's no excuse, man.
And January 16th, was this kind of the right time frame, or did you want to get one in before the end of last year?
No, that was the time frame I was looking for. I had to get another ankle surgery, so I was out for a little while. That's why I didn't get to fight again in 2020. So that was the time I was looking for. Yeah, it works out perfect for me.
And Carlos Condit snapped his losing streak last night. What did you make of his last fight and his win over Court McGee?
It was a pretty safe win, I think. I think he played it pretty safe. He didn't really take a lot of chances, so I think his confidence is probably back now. I think that was a good confidence booster for him, and I expect him to really come out and throw some fire in this fight. You know, I think it's going to be a lot different than his last fight. He didn't look spectacular, really, I guess, but, you know, of course, the type of guy to make you not look spectacular, too. I mean, he's a tough guy that comes forward hard, and he's going to be tough to get out of there. So I think all those factors together made it maybe a little bit underwhelming of a win for Carlos, but I think our fight will be a little different.
And a lot of fans are expecting this one to be just you two throwing down, getting in a fight of the night. Is that how kind of you envision it?
Well, it's possible. Who knows? I kind of envision myself dominating this fight and not really a back and forth or a fight of the night or anything. I think I can dominate this fight.
Carlos Condit's been a durable guy. Like, the only way to finish him past couple times has been by submission, but we obviously know you have a ton of knockout power. Do you think he can be that one to finally put him out?
That's the plan.
What do you think a win over Carlos does for you? Because obviously this stage of your career, like, are you interested in that title run, or are you just kind of interested in these like fun fights and getting in there with these legends?
One fight at a time, man. And you know, Carlos is the guy in front of me right now. He's a very dangerous guy. He's an amazing opponent. Like I said, I expect him to come back with come into this fight with his confidence back and feeling good, and probably, you know, one of the better Carlos Condit we've seen in a long time. I don't know during that run what was going on, but it didn't seem like, or during his losing run, you know, didn't really seem himself. But I think he's back now, so I got to go in and expect the best Carlos Condit that there is and put a stop to it anyway.
And going out to Abu Dhabi, that long flight, do you got anything to kind of carry you through that long flight to keep you from getting bored?
I haven't thought about it, to be honest. That might be a good idea. I don't know.
And with the going to Abu Dhabi, you are going to be fighting at like an odd time. Like, the card starts like early here, just so obviously I don't know why they're doing it, but how do you impact your training with that? Just because you're going to be fighting at these weird times, like something like the last fight on trip that you got fighting at like 5 a.m.
No, I just train, man. You know, you got to get up, train, get in good shape. And now's about the time to start putting some thought into that and start adjusting whatever kind of rhythm I need to be into. I haven't really thought about a lot. I actually just got an email from one of my coaches about it, so I haven't even read it yet though, and we're gonna start strategizing that right now.
Who is going to Abu Dhabi with you?
Who is going? My coach Adam Sabato, longtime wrestling coach, Mark Beecher, a longtime Muay Thai coach, and Mickey Gall.
Well, what's it like training with Mickey Gall? He's one of those, he's slick on the ground. He also gives you probably some good luck.
Yeah, he's got a great ground game. You know, and he's a great training partner. You know, he's come out a few times for my camps and comes and helps me train. So we work well together. He's a great kid, got a bright future in front of him. And like you said, his ground game is really, really good. So we have a lot of fun training.
You haven't been the most active just because of the injuries. Are you hoping that you can get two or three fights in this year just to get back into the momentum of things?
We'll see what happens. Again, I'm taking one fight at a time. Every fight could be my last. I turned 40 in like a week. So I'll be in Abu Dhabi when I turn 40. So, you know, I got a lot going on, kids, businesses, all this stuff. So I just take it one fight at a time and we'll see what happens after this fight. Everyone could be my last at this point.
Do you ever think about retiring? Because I know a lot of people don't like saying the word. They don't really think about it until it happens. But is that something that you're already planning for?
Well, like I said, every fight could be my last. I've been setting up a long time, setting up things so that when I do retire, I'm not broke and not starting from scratch. You know, so I feel like I'm in a position where I could retire if I wanted. But again, we'll take it one fight at a time, man. You know, the way that I feel after this camp, it's going to be hard to say that I'm a retire because I feel great. And, I think, you know, this is going to be the best Matt Brown that you've ever seen, you know, so it's going to be hard to retire. But, you know, there's just a lot more factors than that these days. I got a lot of fights under my belt, but I also have, you know, my kids, you know, that's the big thing, you know, just getting, being able to spend time with my kids and raise them properly and give them the time and energy that they deserve.
Legacy wise, what do you think that a win over Carlos Condit does for you? Because you look down your record, you fought the who's who, you've beaten guys like Stephen Thompson, Diego Sanchez. Like, where would that win over Condit rank for you?
I think a lot of people would probably look at it. You know, Carlos is older. He's been on, you know, went on the losing streak, and you know, a lot of people would say, you know, he's probably, his best days are probably behind him. But to me, I feel like it'd be the biggest win of my career. You know, like he's a former world champion. I think the losing streak, he was either just in a bad place or, you know, maybe just coincidental too, you know, like this sport is crazy. You don't ever know what's going to happen. So to me, it's the biggest win of my career. I expect him to come in the best Carlos Condit we've ever seen. And so to me, you know, the next fight's always the biggest one, but this one's special to me.
Just touching on obviously last year's, how disappointing was that? You're supposed to fight in Columbus, Ohio. And then what was it? Like probably 2-3 weeks before the whole card got canceled.
Yeah, that hurt, man. Like that was a big thing for me. You know, that was a real big deal. I was so well trained. I was in great shape. You know, just had another great camp. And then when coronavirus hit, I mean, we just had no idea what was going to happen. You know, like I thought the world was going to end, or I didn't think Dana would pull it off. I didn't think we would end up fighting for, you know, 6 months, a year. I thought the UFC would be out. You know, bad on me for assuming that, you know. Props to Dana. He made it happen. So good for him. And it's cool to see the UFC carry on. Yeah, but that sucked, man. Like, I really, really wanted to fight in Columbus, and hopefully they can redo it. And maybe someday this all ends and we can get back in the arenas and have some big shows again.
And you mentioned with that Baeza fight, having no crowd kind of threw you off. Like, how much better will you be now that you've already done that once and now you can go back to look back on what kind of threw you off then?
Well, I think I let it throw me off, yeah. You know? And again, that's not being the professional that I am. That's not the person that I am. That's not the fighter that I am. But I let it get to me. And I'm just simply, you know, I've just already decided in my head, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Last thing I wanted to touch on was your coffee business. How's that been?
Very good, actually. Corona helped it a lot. That's like one of the few positives that we got out of Corona, you know, because we do primarily online sales. So, yeah, it's going great. And, you should check it out sometime, man. Try some of the coffee. Some of the best coffee you'll ever have. And I don't say that just out of my bias because it's my own business. Like, we really source the coffee well. And that's why I went into business with my business partner, because as soon as I tried the coffee, I was like, holy cow, this is the best coffee I've ever had, man. Let's do this.
I'll have to try it out. I'll get a bag soon.
Absolutely.
And just that, how important do you think that is for fighters? Is because you look at a lot of fighters, why they hang around for so long is they don't have anything after fighting. Like, how big do you think that is for you? Is you can step away and you still have income. You still have something else outside of fighting.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it, man. Like, you know, you can't do this forever, unfortunately. So that's why, part of the reasons why I built my gym. It's part of the reason I started coffee company. You know, got a few other things I got potentially going on. I'm actually like working on writing a book. You know, they're just, you know, just trying to expand myself and not, you know, I'm a smart enough person that, you know, I'm not just a fighter. That's not the only skill that I have. You know, I'm a fighter at heart for sure. And that's my favorite thing to do. And that's what I think I'm best at. But I think I have enough other skills that, excuse me, there's no reason that I should be broke my whole life.
All right, well, Matt, man, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank
you. We're joined by UFC flyweight Tyson Nam, who's heading out to Abu Dhabi pretty soon. Tyson, man, how's it going?
Doing good. Doing good. Feeling ready.
Yeah. I'm surprised you're fighting Machinel again, because I remember after we talked, after your win over Rivera, you kind of didn't seem interested in that just because you had a bunch of time. You didn't make weight. And then you were rebooked again, and then he withdraws again. Like, was there a point where you were talking to the UFC or your manager and says, like, I can't really trust this guy to make it to the octagon?
No, not at all. I know that the stylistic matchup is really exciting. I can't see it any way where it's going to be boring. He's a finisher. I'm a finisher. And he's ranked number 9, and now I'm ranked number 13. So we got top flyweights going at it. I think the UFC really wants this fight to happen.
And you're obviously from the island out in Hawaii. Are you glad to be heading out to Fight Island, or do you wish it was back in Vegas?
Vegas, definitely. Vegas is literally like a 5-hour flight, where Abu Dhabi, I mean, you have to go to Vegas, which is already like 5-6 hours, and then a 17-hour flight. So a little bit long, but I'm no stranger to traveling to fight, so nothing new, just Vegas would have been preferable.
Yeah, before you even got to the UFC, you were fighting all over the world, like in Russia and all that. How much will that experience help you, just knowing how to manage your weight cut over a long flight?
I think it's huge. You know, you've experienced it once, you're pretty good at it, and I've experienced it, you know, twice in Russia, Kazakhstan, Brazil twice. So I got a handful of experiences to where I know where I should be exactly at what time. And it'll be not easy, but it'll be a little bit better than someone that hasn't.
And fighting on a Wednesday, is that going to be weird for you? Or is it just going to be like another fight day for you?
A little bit weird, but at the same time, I just got to kind of think, like, Wednesday's a Saturday. Saturday is usually when we fight. So I'm thinking Wednesday's a Saturday, and just doing a little bit of math. I passed all my math classes in school, so I think I can calculate exactly what I should be doing at what time.
Are you a bit disappointed that Edward Shmaya fight fell off? Because that was obviously the main event of your card, and that would have got a lot of eyes, especially on this card and your fight.
Yeah, that would have been really cool. I was looking forward to watching that fight, because I mean, Chimaev was, you know, he's on a terror streak right now. But I'm pretty sure the UFC always has a plan, and things will work out in the end.
And now getting into a fight with Machinel, he's obviously a finisher just like himself, but he's a different kind of finisher. He likes to get it down to the ground, submit him. We know where you. It only really takes one punch and you shot someone's lights out. Do you kind of view it as that grappler versus striker fight?
Not at all. I mean, as of recently, I've seen Matt doing a lot of striking. His boxing looks good. He's fast. He's quick. And for myself, you know, me being that I used to fight at 135, coming down to 125, I'm usually always the bigger, stronger person. So, you know, I go over to Russia fighting guys from Dagestan. They can't take me down. And I'm pretty pretty confident that any flyweight that I face won't be able to take me down. So the grappling is going to get nullified. It's going to be a stand-up fight.
And with Schnelli, he hasn't fought in over a year. How do you think that's going to impact him?
Either good or bad. You know, you either either got a little bit of timing issues because you haven't been in the ring for or the cage for a while, or you come out even better than before. Just like when Conor fought Cowboy Cerrone, he looked awesome. So that little bit of time away, yeah, your body gets to recover physically, mentally, and just coming nice and fresh. I'm hoping the best for to see the best match Schnell. So, you know, I never want to fight someone when they're not at their best, and I'm hoping that he's coming to bring it because I'm bringing it right with me.
And entered this fight, like, or before you got into the UFC, everyone kind of said Tyson Nam's that best flyweight outside the UFC for the longest time. Then you get to the UFC, drop your first two fights, but now you've picked up two big knockouts. Like, what's the confidence like now? Just now that you know you belong here, you're on that winning streak, you finally got some wins, you see, and some finishes.
Yeah, you know, coming in, I was matched up with the number five, the number seven flyweight. I had a little bit more injuries than I would have liked to have gone into those two fights. Specifically, my right hand was actually injured, so which is my main offensive skill that I bring to the table. So, but now that I am healed up, and I don't know, 2020 has just been actually kind of awesome for me, that I just get to train all day every day, you know, not having to go off to a day job. So now that I'm actually taking training full time, my body is healthy, and bigger and better things are coming in 2021 for myself.
What's this training camp like for you? Because you've already spent probably quite a few months already studying Matt Schnell. So at this point, is it just more on you, or are you still looking into Schnell and what he can do?
I'm always trying to look and see how I can better, you know, certain positions, or just game planning. You know, somebody will always think of something new that, oh yeah, maybe we can do this and that. You know, a lot of game planning, but as long as I come in there healthy, I feel like I always have a really good chance of finishing the fight.
How do you see this fight playing out? Because we obviously know you have a ton of knockout power. Matt Schnell's been knocked out, and his last fight he got knocked out. So how do you see yourself getting your hand raised?
You know, it's going to start off fast. We're probably going to meet up in the middle. It's going to be a whirlwind of activity. But, you know, after the dust settles, it is going to be Matt Schnell knocked out with me standing with my arms raised.
And going out to Abu Dhabi too, you have to do that quarantine. Are you going to bring anything with you to pass the time? Because it's going to be a long flight and stuck in your hotel room for a couple of days.
I was thinking like a video game system, something of that sort. Yeah. I know a few of the Hawaii boys are planning to bring like their skateboards and whatnot. I'm not a skateboarder. I might be a little bit risque if I jump on a skateboard when I've never skateboarded before, right before a fight. So maybe a gaming system, something to help pass that, what is it, like 48 hours by, something of that sort when we get there.
A bit disappointed you're not on the January 16th card, so you can share a card with Max.
I mean, not at all. We got Hawaii boys on top of every single card, the 16th, the 20th, and even the 23rd. So they had to spread around a little bit of the love for Hawaii. It's always exciting when a Hawaii boy or girl fights. So yeah, I'm not upset at all. They'll still be there to. For me to watch them, and for them to watch me as well too.
And Matt Schnell's ranked in the top 10, so a win over him puts you in that top 10. So what would that be like, to be a top 10 flyweight in the UFC?
That'd be awesome. You know, 2012, after I knocked out Eduardo Dantes, the big website back then was Sherdog, and they had me at a top 10 spot. So 2012, you know, 2021 back in the top 10, that would be that would just be awesome being back at the top for that long a period of time.
Everything goes your way on January 16th. You're a guy that likes to be active. So when would that ideal time frame be? Like, are you looking to get another one in before the summer?
I like within every 3 months. I feel like that's a good time frame for my body to rebuild and peak back out. You know, I ain't no spring chicken, so it takes a little bit longer for me to get those juices going. But man, when it gets going, I can hang with the best of them.
And there's some big flyweight matchups coming up pretty soon. Like, you have Benavidez Askarov, you have Pantoja Manil Cape. Like, are those some of the names you're looking at, or is it just really anyone above you if you beat Chanel?
Yeah, you know, if I get three knockouts in a row, I feel like I can call out a top five flyweight. So just all depends on the performances, and you know, I'm always picturing that is always gonna be a great performance from here on out.
And I know after you beat Rivera, you said you wanted Benavidez. Is that someone still on that list of before he hangs it up, you want to fight?
It is. I know that he's ranked number 3 at the moment, so that is a top 5, and I really would enjoy sharing the cage with Joseph.
And just a few more things is obviously that flyweight title fight happened recently. What did you think of Figueiredo Moreno?
Man, that was awesome. It really displayed what the flyweights are all about, is back and forth, trading hands, doing a little bit of grappling. It was literally nonstop action for 25 minutes, and you know, that they hurt each other back and forth, and you know, I'm pretty sure that majority of the fans that was watching the fight were always at the edge of their seat. It was that exciting. It really just boosted the flyweight division in terms of importance. That we need to have a flyweight division around in the UFC, because it's very exciting, and it's gonna attract the masses.
Yeah, because what's your thought on that? Because you're obviously on the outside looking in when the UFC was cutting the flyweight division. You probably thought you might never get the shot at the UFC at flyweight. And now headlining back-to-back pay-per-views. Like, what's that like for you now to be part of it and see how much the UFC's investing in the division?
Yeah, definitely I feel like with the cuts that they were doing and the people that they're bringing in, they're trying to revamp to get the most exciting flyweights in the UFC. I feel like that they've done a very good job at picking and choosing, scouting almost who's going to bring eyes to the division. And you know, I guess early on, right when the division opened, there wasn't a lot of finishes, you know, a lot of decisions. But I feel like I've not done the numbers, but I feel like the flyweights have been more than less finishing their fights, and the heavier guys been going a little bit more toward decisions. So I feel like it's kind of flip-flopping right now. So yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time, and it's exciting to be in the flyweight division for myself.
And just last thing, you're no stranger to putting on exciting fights. Are you looking for that bonus? Because I thought you could have went 2-for-2 last two fights, a bonus. So that surprised you didn't get that last fight.
Well, I mean, you know, the last fight, yeah, I had a good finish, but I feel like if that was on any other card, yeah, I would have had the finish. Yeah. But oh my God, everybody was just getting knocked out left and right on top of that card after watching just only like half of the card. I was like, I don't think I'm gonna get a bonus on this one. This card is just way too lit to be hoping for that.
All right, well, Tyson, man, I appreciate the time as always. Thank you for doing this.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, we're joined by UFC light heavyweight Ike Villanueva. Ike, man, how's it going?
Man, it's going good, man. Getting ready for the big showdown coming up January 20th. Man, I'm excited for it. Just ready to get in there, clock in this first W, man. Got to get this off, man. I got to get that W.
Yeah, for sure. But before you end your fight, your last one, how disappointing was that, just having that cut end the fight? Because we know you're one of those durable guys that a cut really never really stops you.
No, man. That was a tough pill to swallow. I'm a veteran in the game, man. So I've been here before, man. I was just a little upset, man. I spent a whole month out there at Shrink Resort with Coach Eric Nixick. I learned a lot of great things. I'm very thankful for the time I got to spend out there. Met a whole bunch of new brothers, man. So it happens in the fight game, man. It happens so quick, man, with the opponent change. And I went from fighting a brawler to a point striker. Just got cut, man. You got to shake it off. And I knew deep down, even in the backstage, I was talking to Jason House, my manager. He goes, man, shake it off. Let's get hit the lottery. We'll bounce back.
And on your record right now is 0-2. But if I'm not mistaken, Chase Sherman tested positive, right? So is that going to be into a no contest?
Yes, we're just waiting on Florida right now to release that, you know, take that off my record. We're waiting on them. USADA already said it was going to be a no sanction. We're just waiting on Florida. They got the final say-so on that bout, but it's going to be a no contest. We heard from McMaynard about it, so it should be a no contest. Just it takes time to come off the record.
Is that a bit of relieving now? So now it doesn't look like you're 0-2 in the UFC?
Yeah, it does. I mean, man, no doubt, man. Chase is a good dude, man. It's something that happens, it happens. Ain't no bad will against the guy, but, you know, we all got to be on the same field when it comes to this fighting game. Got to be clean as part of the USADA testing, man. That's why a lot of guys go elsewhere, man. You see all these guys go to Bellator or go to ONE. They're all yacked up. You just look at them. You got us. We're straight on, man. USADA strict, man. Knocking on our door 6 in the morning. It's crazy. But, hey, man, I'm just glad they shaked it off my record and give me another one after this. I just got to take care of business in this fight.
And this fight against Vinicius Moreira, you've probably seen the UFC's making a lot of cuts. So do you think this is kind of do or die? Like, you got to win this to keep your job here?
Oh, no doubt, man. It's a must win for me here. So it's a balls to the wall now, man. Here's my game 7, man. So it's do or die, and I'm going to make the most of it. And I'm really going to show why I belong here. So, hey, I got to take care of business. And I see a lot of holes in this game I can exploit. I look forward to dominating.
And Vinicius Moreira, 0-3 in the UFC. What have you taken away from his fight? Because he's been finished in all 3.
Yeah, man. This fight right here is going to be a classic grappler versus striker. He's sticking to what he knows. He wants to grapple. He wants to look for the takedown. And you really got to stop that takedown. Once you stop it, it kind of breaks his will. Every fight, as soon as you touch him, man, his will breaks. And he just wants to panic and go for the shot. So, hey, I just got to be ready for that. And, you know, break his will and just, hey, man, get him out of there.
Early on in your career, you got submitted a few times. You haven't been submitted since 2016. Like, how much improvement has that ground game shown? Because he's a guy that's going to want to get down to the ground and try to tap you out.
That just Coach Dan Pineda really pushed me and put me in bad spots on the ground, man. Be in the bad spots in the gym. So in the fights, you know what to do. And that's what I've been thankful for. Everybody here at 4-Ounce Fight Club, Houston Main Street, taking care of me on the ground. I'm very thankful, and I just look forward to putting on the show because he's going to try to get it to the ground. It's my job to stop it, and I'm ready for it.
How do you see this fight playing out?
Man, every fight, you got to be 100% confident, man. I'm going to get him out of there in the first. As soon as I touch him, man, my strength, man, it's there, man. I just got to exploit. There's a big hole in this game that nobody exploited yet. I look forward to showing it coming January 20th on Fight Island, man. So we're headed to the Kumite, man, so I'm excited for this.
36 years old, you're a veteran of this game. What will it be when you finally get that first UFC win?
Everybody, man, this 84 Chevy still running strong, man. So, hey, once I get that win, it's just a relief, man, because it ain't just for me. It's for everybody back home, my fight team, man, my kids, man, my wife, everybody who's been loyal to me through this journey. I told people I would get here. It took time, but, hey, man, hard work pays off, man. You just got to keep pushing, man. Don't let nobody tell you you can't make it somewhere. That hard work pays off, man.
Is it a bit weird that you probably pictured getting to the UFC for so long, fighting in front of these sold-out crowds, and your first 3 fights are in front of no one?
Man, yeah, I'm a crowd pleaser, man. I feed off the energy of the crowd. And not having the crowd is a little bit different, man. This is an advantage for the guys that have the anxiety, the guys that really can't perform well in front of the crowd. Now we get in these little small arenas, nobody there. You're like, God, it's just – it's terrible, but it's still a job, man. Thank you, Dana White and UFC, for still letting us work. But, hey, I got to shake that off. I really got to go out there and perform, man, because I'm going to be on the big stage today, man. Anywhere where you got Conor McGregor going to be around, you got to show up, man. So, you know, all the legends are there. I look forward to really putting on the show, man.
Fighting on a Wednesday, is that going to be any different for you, or are you just going to view Wednesday as the new Saturday?
Yeah, Wednesday's new Saturday. Man, I'm a fighter. It don't matter what day it is. I'll fight you on Sunday. I'll fight you on Monday. It don't matter. Just, hey, they're paying us to fight. It's a job. I got to feed my kids. Let's go to work.
Was this about the right time you wanted to return, just to especially get that bad taste out of having to fight under the cut?
Oh, no doubt, man. I was ready to get. As soon as I got back home, thanks to the UFC doctor, everybody sewed me up back to stage just to fight. It was real quick, man. The cut, man, he stopped the bleeding right away. And, man, once I got back home, Jason House called me. He goes, hey, bro, I got you. We're going to make a quick return. And I went right back to work. So I've been ready since October 1st. And we just been working, grinding, really pushing it for this opportunity. And thankful I got it. I was hoping for December, but they're like, no, you're going January 30th. And now they bumped it up January 20th. So I'm a little pissed because I couldn't enjoy the holidays. I lost 10 days that you can really, you know, enjoy some bad meals. So I lost all that. So I spent my New Year's on my couch with my daughter, man. So most people outside drinking, enjoying family. I'm watching Coco Melon with my daughter sitting on the couch.
Are you looking forward to making the trip out to Fight Island?
Oh, no doubt, man. Look forward to really, you know, getting out there, experiencing the world, man. As a fighter, that's your whole goal. It's going to be strange in different time zone, but I'm excited for it because it's different, man. Fighters perform in any circumstances. You got to go out and perform. I look forward to it. I'm excited.
It's going to be fighting at a weird time. Like, the card starts at, like, 9 a.m. Eastern, which is, what, I think 8 a.m. out in Texas. So, like, how do you prepare for that?
Man, it's crazy because I told my fans, I was like, man, it's going to be crazy. And everybody back home, big soccer fans, you know, Mexico's their team. Like, it's just like the World Cup. We'll be drinking at 8 in the morning, getting ready to watch you fight. I'm laughing. But for me, I was like, man, I'm ready to put on a show, man. My kids are a little upset because, like, Dad, can I go to school late that day? I was like, they're, you know, looking forward to me fighting. So it's going to be strange, but, hey, man, I'm ready to go. So I'm excited for it.
Light heavyweight division, it's getting a bit more deeper now. So what do you think a win over Venetius does for you?
It does. It's getting deep, but I like to get down to 185. That's the opportunity that presents itself. That's where I belong. I can hang with some guys at 205. I beat them with speed. But I know as a strong fighter, I can make some noise at 185, but we'll see how it plays out. My manager, he makes that call. I just fight. So let's see what they say, man. I just got to take care of business. One fight at a time. January 20th is where I make my next step.
Yeah, because 185, you probably need, like, though you couldn't be taking any short notice fights at 185, I assume.
No, sir. Yeah, no, sir. That's a good 6-week camp, but it's more discipline camp, you know, dieting every day. It's just, I like it because it's more discipline for me. I can get away with stuff at 205 that I can't get away at 185. So I look forward to it.
I'm surprised you'd want to go to 185 just because you're a guy that's fought as high as heavyweight. So you don't really see many heavyweights try to go down.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But hey, we'll see how it plays out, man. I can do both. I got wins at middleweight, light heavyweight, heavyweight of my career. So I look forward to anything that comes to present itself, man. So hey, I'm a fighter at heart. So I got to make any weight they give me.
How much better do you think your cardio is at 205 compared to your heavyweight debut in the UFC?
Oh, tremendous, tremendous, man. Because, you know, I took that fight at heavyweight. We weren't doing nothing. It was just, after my last fight in the local scene, I knew I was going to get the call. I just didn't know when. Then once they shut everything down, we were not doing nothing. Gyms were closed. Man, I had a little struggling, a little knee and neck injury where I couldn't run that much. It was just, but I was just that fighter at heart that I knew, hey, man, I can fight anybody you give me. Just my left hand, as long as I got that left hand, this is there. That's my power hand. But cardio-wise, I've been pushing it, man. Just road work, the sprints. So I'm excited to really show out that I can perform in the big lights and the big stage. So we'll see what happens, man.
Everything goes your way on January 20th. How quickly would you want to turn this thing around? Especially with the win, you'd get some momentum behind your name.
Ah, man, give me about 2 to 3 months, man. Don't push it too crazy. 2 to 3 months, come back home, fight here. I like to continue to keep on getting better. I'm still student of the game every day in the gym when we're learning different things. And that's something that you got to, as a fighter, especially at my age, hey, you got to be open to everything, the wrestling aspects, everything. Because they're signing a lot of these kickboxers are coming in, man. There's some new upcomers that these little hungry guys with the kickboxing. So there's a lot of stuff I still got to fix. But hey, about 2 to 3 months, I'll be ready to get back in there. If it comes sooner, hey, man, if I got to do it in 6 weeks' notice, hey, let's do it. But yeah, I'm a fighter, so.
Out in Fight Island is the bigger octagon. Your last fight, you fought in the smaller one at the Apex. Do you think that benefits you? Because as a grappler, everyone always says the grapplers, they like the smaller cage because they try to close that distance.
Oh, doubt. Give me that center of the cage because any jiu-jitsu guys, this guy's going to try to pin me on the fence, look for that. Hey, I'm going to take the center of the cage, and I'm really going to let my hands go. And, hey, come on. You get those lazy kicks. Man, I've been watching film on this guy a lot, so we look forward to exploiting it, man. But my goal is to get my hand raised and – in Dubai, man, Abu Dhabi, man, it's amazing feeling to get out there and fight. So I look forward to it.
And last thing, your manager, one of the best managers in the game. How big has Jason House been throughout your career to get you to this point?
Jason House, he's been a blessing, man. A lifesaver, Jason. The whole Iridium team, man. It's been an amazing feeling. Jason House will be in my corner on Fight Island. That's just something real. I hold to my heart that everything he did for me, I got to have him. I got to get this win for him. This is all for him because he put his neck out on the line for me. And I got to return the favor. So I look forward to, you know, sharing that moment with him, man, Fight Island.
Well, Ike, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you for doing this.
Hey, thank you, brother.
Appreciate All right, we're joined by one of the voices of the Octagon, Brendan Fitzgerald. Brendan, how's it going?
It's going great, Cole. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just really wanted to talk to you about, like, what this past year, like, just starting out, you and Michael Bisping head out to Brasilia. The week before, it's a packed event in Vegas. Like, what, from your perspective, like, what went on that week? Because that was kind of when the whole world kind of shut down.
Yeah, you're right, man. So the world really shut down when I was on a plane. You know, it was just crazy. I flew from Las Vegas to New York, and then New York down to Sao Paulo, and then Sao Paulo up to Brasilia. But on that flight from Las Vegas to New York, and I had live TV on, and I was watching a mix of, like, SportsCenter and the news. And SportsCenter was, you know, that was when conference tournaments were starting to shut down in college basketball. That's when, like, the first thing to hit was the Golden State Warriors said that they were going to do no fans the next night. And that was, like, this big thing, you know. It's just like, oh my God, they're actually going to go no fans. It's starting to affect us. And I didn't really put together what it would mean for me. Like, but then, like, okay, no fans. Now this conference tournament's canceled. Like, in the span of 4 hours, it was just crazy how much had changed. So I land in New York, I call my boss and I say, should I get on this plane to Brazil, right? Because then once you're in the air there, it's 10 hours. It's out of the country because they had announced that European travel was going to be shut down into the country. And I'm like, okay, this thing sucks, but the last thing I want is it to suck and me be out of the country in Brazil, away from my family. Are they going to let us back in, quarantine? I mean, you know, knowing that Trump and Dana are cool, I was just like, well, I figure we'll be able to get back in somehow. But no, it's just a nerve-wracking thing. Like, masks were not a thing you traveled with back then. So now I'm in, you know, the Sao Paulo airport, one of the busiest airports in the world, with no mask. And you just start noticing how many people you interact with on a normal basis. You know, how not careful we are with germs and how we're able to handle it in a non-pandemic. But then you start going, oh my goodness. And I touch my face pretty often, don't I? And just, it was just nuts that weekend. I'll always remember kind of that travel experience. And then once we got to the hotel, just I stayed in my room as much as possible and just tried to take as best care of myself as I could and got through it. And it was so scary because we didn't know anything. You know, now we kind of know how to protect ourselves the best we can. And we know that if you get it, it's not a death sentence and stuff. So just the not knowing was certainly a big part of why it was so stressful.
And then obviously everything shuts down. When it comes back, or what, during the shutdown, like, were you worried, like, man, maybe my job's over, like, I got to start looking for other things?
I mean, what would I have looked for, though? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that was the biggest thing, is like, oh man, I hope my job's okay. But if not, I can do, oh wait, you know, like, there was no industry that was moving. So I think pretty early on, like, just the fact that Dana was so gung-ho on, like, we're going on this event, like, we're going on April 18th, you know, and then, like, we booked it. We found a venue, we booked it, and then it gets shut down by the governor of California, basically, in Disney. But I had a sense then, I was like, you know, I would be fearful in a lot of other positions, but I feel like I work for the right guy in the right company where he's going to send a message. Like, he's using this as, like, we're going on. And then also just the nature of our sport being an individual one certainly helps. Like, you know, you look at, like, golf and, you know, in the UFC and, like, boxing, it's like, okay, this person has it. They're off the card. They're out. But we still have an event, you know, whereas a quarterback gets it in the NFL. How many people we've seen their schedule just get kind of crazy. And I'm shocked that college football was able to have the type of season that they were having, that they were able to, even though it was obviously very different. The NFL looks like it, at this point, they're just like, we're going, you know, and they figured it out. But our schedule, while it was affected in a big way and a lot of fight cards have been affected, we can still, like, put on events. Two people can step in there and fight, you know.
And then getting into these fights, and you see a lot of these last minute COVID cancellations. How do you do that as commentator? Because you obviously spend countless hours researching these fights, and you don't really know if that's going to be the matchup come Saturday when they step in there.
I know. And you know, the reality is it exists for all fights. Like, it existed before the pandemic. It was like, I remember, you know, like in, like Rob Font was in South Carolina last year. I remember this one just because I know Rob a little bit. And just like, he was supposed to fight John Lineker. And then like the night before weigh-ins, that fight's off. It was the co-main event, that fight's off. You know, and I'd done, obviously we'd done, at that point, all your research has been done, basically. You don't really do a lot of research on Friday before fight day. So it happens. Obviously it turns up a notch. So now you put together a fight card and you just go, wow, this is a good fight card. If it stays together, how many fights do we lose in this? Like, at one point, our fight card on December 19th that I called was at like six. I want to say it was at 16 fights at one point, and it ended up being, if I remember correctly, 12. You know, so just crazy. But it's like, you can't say, well, this fight will probably be canceled, so I'll put a little less work into it. You just go, you know what? Hopefully, I call their next fight. You know, if they can't do this one, because I've already done a lot of research on them, and I don't throw away the notes. You know, it's not like, well, the hell with this. It's just like, put it on the back burner and, you know, be as prepared as you can for whatever's coming.
And then during that first stretch in Jacksonville, everyone was saying, oh, I could hear DC and whatnot. Were you a bit worried yourself? Like, man, maybe I have to talk not as loud because there can be, maybe I'm like nitpicking them and they can hear me and whatnot.
Yeah, that was something that was weird, that, because the Contender Series is that background. So people are like, oh, well, Brendan has experience with the Contender Series. But we don't sit next to the Octagon in the Contender Series. We sit in a studio, you know, now at the Apex upstairs, you know, on a different floor and watch off monitors because of the quiet nature of the show. It's always nerve-wracking. I mean, in broadcasting from the start, like if there's somebody in your house right now, you might be like, well, you know, like even when I do my podcast and like my wife's out there, just like, oh, should I keep it down? Like, I don't want to sound like an idiot in here. Like, there's always that sense. I remember I called college football games in a press box, and like the press box was just one big room. Like, and it was a D3 school, so it's not like a ton of media are in there, but just anybody who's like there in a working capacity is in this press box. 20 people, let's say, and all of a sudden, like, there's a big first down and you're up like yelling basically, or you're like, you know, you're at full volume, and then when you get off the air, you're kind of like, oh, I probably was a little bit weird there. But like, the choice is have a bad broadcast and, you know, keep it down for the sake of others, or I gotta give my best effort and make it sound like it should to a lot more people watching and listening at home. So I mean, it's just, at this point in my career, it's just kind of like, yeah, might be a little weird if you take off the headphones and look around. But when you're in it and when you have those headphones on, you have no choice, because the last thing I'm going to do is, you know, have a bad broadcast on purpose for the sake of anything else around me.
Did you go to Fight Island? You went out there once, right?
I went to the second one.
Yeah. So what was that like? Because for me, like, I have a bunch of casual friends. Like, I have some couple hardcores watch everyone. A couple of casual ones. The Fight Island thing, I think, was like Dana White's most brilliant thing this
cool,
year.
Right? I mean,
I had so many of my friends text me like, oh, when's this Fight Island card? Like, I want to see this Fight Island. And he tricked so many people. My friends thought the Octagon was actually on the beach and everything. Right. But what was the Fight Island experience like for you? Because obviously it's a long flight, the quarantine when you get there.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, like, there were some, if you look at the negatives of it, you'd be like, oh man, like, this is going to be a lot to deal with. But I had never been to Abu Dhabi and Yas Island, and I'd heard about it. I always figured I would get there. I never thought it would be in this capacity, because we kind of had a 5-year deal with them, I think, that we just signed. So I was like, I'll probably get there at some point. And then like, I wanted to go because I didn't go to the first one. You know, the first one was shorter and we had the staff over there that we needed. And so I was just like, well, I heard all the stories. I heard what the hotel was like. I heard what the quarantine situation. I was like, I wanna know what that's like, you know? And if you have to travel at this point, if it's going to be on a chartered flight, you know, with only people that have tested and cleared, and then you go over there and then you know, 48 hours in your room. Now, it was a really nice hotel. I had a really nice room. You know what I mean? Like, 48 hours of peace and quiet to like watch whatever you want, read a book, get a workout in. Like, that to me, like, I'm okay by myself. You know what I mean? I'm okay with, like, it was, you know, treated as like a health retreat or something. Let me just quiet down here, do a little bit of work, stay in touch with my family and all that in a really nice room. Toured around, saw the Octagon on the beach, you know. It was fun. Like it was to me, it was really fun because it was like the closest thing to being in your early 20s again, to being in college. Like, it's like, we're all in this place. We're all going to eat at the same restaurants. Like, as long as you like who you work with, and I do, it was kind of like a fun little, you know, unique thing. And who knows how long we'll be going back to Fight Island repeatedly, but he did it the right way. And all of a sudden, when he said the words Fight Island, I think everybody jumped on board. Then you start making some cool t-shirts. And like the backdrop of what you can do from a marketing standpoint or something like that is awesome. And that certainly was proven.
Just a couple more things is, obviously, you're a main part of the Contender Series. The whole thing is Tuff's coming back. What do you think of that? Because I see a lot of people say, oh, Tuff doesn't really have a spot because of the Contender Series.
I was thinking of that literally yesterday. I was just like, that's right. The Ultimate Fighter's coming back. I wonder where we are on that, you know? Because then I think we made the announcement and then like the wave of COVID kind of went back up a little bit. So I don't know what the plans are on that. I don't know. I know that obviously the Apex is a perfect spot for it. Even though I like the Tuff gym for that setting, but in terms of like the extra gym and whatever, and then Dana announces, you know, obviously the hotel's not built, but we're going to build a hotel, like I think near the premises. And it's just like, cool. Then, all right, that puzzles into place where the Ultimate Fighter is back and they can stay in the dorms and, or, you know, whatever happens with that. I don't know what is happening with it right now. I think it's cool. I think it's just like, the Contender Series took the place of the Ultimate Fighter, and then the Ultimate Fighter's coming back, and we can have both. We can have the long form stories of a season, and we can have the short, like 2 hours, five fights, and some contracts given out. I think that if you know, both can survive, because MMA fans, as you know, they'll watch everything. I mean, they'll watch everything. It's just one of those sports where you want to eat it all up. So let's give it to them.
And then with the Contender Series, how important has that been for your job? Because they're signing so many fighters. By the time you call their fights, you've already seen them and done all the research for the Contender Series.
Yeah, I mean, important for my job because it got me in the door. You know, that was like my audition to get the job of being a UFC announcer was the Contender Series that first season. So like I'll always – that show is just such a special thing for me. And, you know, because of the relationships it's allowed me to create specifically with Paul Felder, because we were partnered that first year, and then Laura Senko, who I'm friends with now, and just like the fact that it's been four seasons and it's like, wow, we kind of went through this little like Contender Series college thing and look at where it is, but we still get to do the Contender Series because it's been so successful. And then you're right. Like I'm able to be the voice of some of these big moments for stars before they're even in the UFC. Like, star building is a big part of our business. And if it can start before they get to the UFC, that's just, it's awesome for the fighters. It's awesome for our company and our production crew to have this kind of footage and be able to create these kinds of features on these people. And, you know, it's just, it's been awesome to be a part of it, because then, like you said, like I've seen their fights a couple of times. You know, I called Jamie Pickett and then he's in the UFC, or Tefon Chukwi, you know, that fight that we just saw happen. And then it's cool when you get the storyline of Contender alums squaring off against one another, or all that sort of stuff. So to be able to be on it on the ground floor is kind of cool. It's like you get to be a college football announcer and then an NFL announcer in the same time. And it's kind of neat.
Just last thing. I know you're not much for previews, but three big cards coming up. What's the one under the radar fight you're looking forward to?
The under the radar fight. Wow. Man, you know, because I'm not going this time, I haven't really dived in. I saw a fight the other day. I think it's on the – is it on the Cater card, or is it on the Chiesa and Magny card? But Tyson Nam is fighting Matt Schnell.
The 20th, the Chiesa and Magny.
I just looked at that. I mean, because, you know, I love the main events.
Yeah.
I love the first one on ABC, Holloway and Cater is just awesome. Chandler and Hooker, like those are the easy answers. But I looked at that card and I was just like, that's your fight of the night right there. The Tyson and Matt Schnell has some fireworks potential early in the night. So I love when we get one of those, you know, one of those crazy fights that's like the second or third in, because I think it sets the tone for a lot of people.
Well, Brendan, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cole. Appreciate it, man.